So with all the things that are going on in the world today, we've got Black Lives Matter, we've got the coronavirus, we've got the abductions, we've got drugs, we've got all this stuff happening in the world. How do we keep the faith? How do we know that we can take comfort in God? How do we know that God's still with us when the news is bombarding us with all this stuff of what's going on and how hard it is? Because you just cry out and it's like, God, where are you at in all this mess? It's like waking up on the side of a bull, which I did do. In Cody, Wyoming, one thing that I prayed for before I gave my life to the Lord was I wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to ride a bull. So God answered that prayer, and there I was. I remember watching the bull's head turn out, and then I blacked out. That was it. No idea. And I woke up on the side of the bull, staring at his shoulder, going, we don't want to be here. This is not the right spot. So I threw my arm to get back up on top. And apparently in that motion, I blacked back out again. And I just remember my body going, the thud, the thud. And Mr. Bull left a hoof print here, and a hoof print here. And it was a long ride to Montana the next day. But I have a tattoo on this shoulder blade as a memorial that God answers our prayers, no matter how minute they may be to anyone else. So that leads us into today's text. Why in the world would God command that we build a memorial after he just dried up the land that we could walk through? I mean, we're not talking like a little creek or a little stream or nothing like that. God dried it up. They walked through. Wouldn't that be something that we would remember? I mean, I'd like to think that I would. I mean, you know, hey, go through here, boom. We're going through, it's dry, all of a sudden, river's closed, it's a river again. But if we look at Joshua's life, pardon me for a second. If we look at Joshua's life, we can kind of see why he didn't really question God on why he wanted to have them build an altar there or build a memorial there. Because if we go back to when they were in Egypt, God did all kinds of miracles, got them out of Egypt. Go check it out if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's really, really cool. He led them through the wilderness. We had clouds, we had fire, we had all kinds of cool stuff that, you know, God was with them. Couldn't forget that. So they go and God says, I'm going to give you this promised land. And they said, okay. So they camped out for a little bit and they decided that they're going to send 12 spies into the promised land just to check it out and see what's going on. So the 12 spies went. They spent 40 days in there checking it out. Come back with the report, and they said, yep, this land is awesome. It has the best fruits that we've ever seen, has the biggest fruits that we've ever seen. It's flowing with milk and honey, and everything's cool, except for the fact that the people that live there, they're huge, and there's a lot of them, and their walls and their cities are very well fortified. So if we go in there, we're going to die. We're going to get massacred. This doesn't seem like a good idea. Well, there's Joshua and Caleb, and they stand up and say, wait a minute. Don't you remember what all God said and what all God did? We can go. Let's do this. Well, majority ruled, so the Israelites then camped out in the desert for 40 years and just kind of hung out there, and they were grumbling, and they were upset, and they even wanted to stone a lot of people for trying to lead them into certain death. So they forgot. So God prepared Joseph to take over after Moses passed away. Moses passed away. Joseph became the leader, and Joseph was going to lead him into the promised land. So Joseph also prepared the people to go. So they're crossing and doing all this stuff, and like I said, they cross through the river, and God says, build a memorial there. So that way you remember what God has done. And that way you don't forget. So that way when I tell you what to do to go into the promised land, you remember. So I already said that I have one memorial here. I have another memorial here on this shoulder blade. I have a tattoo of a cross because Christ paid it on the cross. But my even bigger memorial is my son David. I can't have kids naturally. I had testicular cancer. So when my wife and I decided that we were going to get pregnant, it was going to be an expensive process, and it was going to be a process all itself. So thankfully, I worked for a company at the time that they allowed me to have some extra runs and do some stuff to make some extra money so we could pay for all the doctor visits and everything to get pregnant. So God provided. Then my wife conceived while I was delivering to a prison in Allenwood, Pennsylvania. I was supposed to be home for that, but yes, my wife got pregnant while I was in prison. And but she conceived on the first time. And anyone that knows anything about that process, I guess that doesn't happen very often. So that was another huge answer to prayer. And you'll have to verify with my wife on this aspect. I don't know nothing about pregnancy. I thought we were having a normal pregnancy after that point. I thought everything was good. I don't know. She's the woman. She carried him. Check with her. So, yeah. So David's due date was June 30th. And we had the C-section scheduled for the week before. That way we knew I would be home from the truck. Well, a little bit before June 30th, like 2 months before, on April 24th, God would change our lives forever. I was supposed to have a load going down to Florida, but they couldn't find any loads. They couldn't find anything like that. So they got me a load going to Jersey, so I was going to get through the house. So April 24th, 2016 was a Sunday morning. I'll never forget. My wife came and picked me up. We went and visited with friends and family, and we went home. And she started having some complications. So we called the doctor up and said, hey, you know, this is what's going on. They said, yeah, we want to check this out. It's something we want to see. So we went down to Lititz, and they said, she's not going to have a full-term pregnancy, but figure sometime this week y'all are going to have your baby. So I went out to make the phone calls to get all the stuff taken care of for getting another driver. There again, God had a plan. He got me through the house. God had a plan that there was another driver sitting not that far away that didn't have a load, could go deliver a load for me. My dad was close to the hospital, so he could come over, pick up the paperwork, and get it to the driver. I mean, this is God's dealing all these details out. So I'm on the phone with my dispatcher, and the nurse comes running out. She goes, you're going to be a father. I said, okay. And she goes, no, you're going to be a father, like, right now. I said, oh, okay. I told my dispatcher, I said, apparently I'm going to be a father, like, right now. I've got to go. So I go walking in to follow the nurse down in this room, and my wife and I just didn't find out what we were having. We just knew we were having a baby. We had a boy's name, and we had a girl's name picked out. No one knew. And the nurse asked me, she goes, do you want to know what you're having? I said, I don't know if I'm allowed to find out without my wife. So she goes, well, you got to kind of make up your mind here pretty quickly because he's going to be, your baby's going to be coming through here fairly quickly. I said, okay. So next thing I know, they're wheeling him by, and the nurse that's wheeling him by looks at the other nurse and says, hey, does he want to know what he's having? And she said, well, you never gave me an answer yet. But just, she looked at me and she said, just for peace and comfort, you've had a beautiful baby boy. But we've got to get him back in and hooked up on life support because his lungs weren't fully developed. So I looked at the nurse and I said, is that a general term or did we actually have a baby boy? She said, no, you had a baby boy. And I said, you double check them parts down there to make sure that was the right thing, right? No, I'm not getting my hopes up because, yeah. So she said, yes, you had a baby boy. My mother-in-law was out in the in the waiting room, and I was able to go out and tell her that we had a baby boy, and she said, before you finish, your dad was just here to grab the keys. Go, he's still out in the parking lot, go tell him. So I was able to go out and tell my father, face to face, that he had a grandson, and that his middle name is my dad's name, and that his first name came from Christine's dad. I said, so your legacy will continue on. That meant the world to me. And that I could do that face to face. And that was God's timing. No other way. So I go back in and talk with the nurses and everything like that. And they're letting us know, hey, we're doing everything that we can. And, you know, but the first 24 hours here, we've got to get through them. Then it's the next 48 and so on and so on. It's a day by day. And I remember going out and just crying and pleading with God. Lord, please save my son. You're the only one that can do this. You're the only one that can bring him through this. You're the only one that can heal this. And I remember saying that, I remember praying, and I also remember saying it, that Lord, King David went through all this stuff before he became king. Even after he became king, he messed up, he did this, but you brought him through it. You can bring my son David through this. And at the final part of that, I remember saying, God, even if he doesn't make it, it's okay, because he'll be in heaven and he'll be waiting there for his daddy when he gets there. That was the hardest prayer, but I said, God, no matter what, you are still good. It will be okay. Well, I went back in, and they said, hey, we've done all that we can do. The nurses were in defeat. They wanted to keep David in the horseway there. But they said he needs more help than what we can give him. So they put him on a helicopter in a pizza oven-looking thing, and wheeled him out and put him on a helicopter and flew him to Hershey. There's a lot of stuff that happened in Hershey, but because I know y'all want to get out of here, we won't go into all that. But so things progressed, and David got better, and they kept saying, figure on June 30th, his due date, figure that's when he's going to be going home. Pardon me for a second here. They said, figure June 30th will be the day that he's going home. But okay. So we were renovating the house and everything like that, getting him ready, making sure everything was thoroughly clean, because we knew that his lungs were not as strong as they should be, and his immune system wasn't what it should be neither. Well, apparently, in typical David fashion, we've got to come early again, and we got to make this stuff happen faster. So June 2nd, we got to bring him home. And now, mind you, we just went going from the NICU and all, having all the support and all the help and all the people there that could help us and guide us and lead us and do all the things that, and everything like that. So we asked the doctors when we took him home, what do we need to do? And they said, just make sure that he keeps breathing. It's like, okay. Yeah, that's comforting. So needless to say, we didn't sleep good for the first couple nights, but there again, God pulled us through. Yeah. But so anyone that knows David knows that his lungs work very well, knows that he is very active. So that part was very well taken care of. The holes in his heart went closed. I forget when they went closed, but they went closed. Everything's good there. A couple weeks back, we went to the heart doctor, and after the heart doctor read it twice, because I don't think he believed what he's seen, the thick wall of his heart, he now has a normal heart. So That's only God can do that and make all that stuff right. Still has a little bit of a heart murmur, and he still has a little bit of vision problem in his one eye. But all in all, y'all see him. He's got energy. He's got zeal. He's got life. Yeah. So we're going to get back to Joshua here for a little bit. And the last thing that Joshua says, or is written about Joshua, is in Joshua 24. I'm not going to read the end of it, but there's a little bit more past that. But just before Joshua passes, they have another monument. But before this, Joshua is reminding the people, hey, remember what all God did for you. Remember what all God brought you through. And remember that he's going to be with us. And as long as we don't turn our hearts from him, he'll bring us through anything and everything. Remember his promises. So they're in the process of making a covenant with the Lord. And I'm going to read 24 through 28. Yeah, 24 through 28. The Lord said to Joshua, "We will serve the Lord our God. We will obey him alone." So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day at Shechem, committing them to a permanent and binding contract between themselves and the Lord. Joshua recorded these things in the book of the law of God as a reminder of their agreement. He took a huge stone and rolled it beneath the oak tree beside the tabernacle of the Lord. Joshua said to all the people, "This stone has heard everything the Lord said to us. It will be a witness to testify against you if you go back on your word." Then Joshua sent the people away, each to their own inheritance. There again, another monument, another reminder, a physical reminder for not only the people that were there, but for the future generations to come of, you made this covenant with the Lord. And stay faithful and stay true to him. It's our testimonies, the things that God brought us through, is not just for ourselves, but it's for our community, it's for our church, and it's for everyone around. Yeah. So, in conclusion, do whatever it takes to build the monuments, whether it be pictures, whether it be journaling for those that can journal, whether it be whatever you got to do to pass on what God has done in your life to your family, so that way they know their heritage, that way they know where they came from, that way the church knows where it came from and where it's going and what God has brought it through, because we know the times are going to get harder. We know in Revelation it's not going to be a fun time, but we need to hold faith, or true and faithful to the word of the Lord and what he's already done. And if we have the pictures and we have the memorials and whatever else that we need to do, in my case, I have tattoos. I have my son David. I mean, there's multiple things. And it's all on what you look at as a constant reminder that God is with us and he'll bring us through.